Welcome to Watermark's Church Leadership Podcast, a conversation with church leaders for church leaders. I'm your host, John McGee. Thanks so much for joining us today. Well, hey friends, welcome back. Joined in the studio again by my good friend, Dave Bruskus, continuing our series on things we didn't learn in seminary. So Dave, welcome back, brother. How are we doing today?
I'm good. I'm excited to talk about this subject because of all the things I didn't learn in seminary that were my weak spot, this is it.
Brother. So,
we're going to major on my minors today, I think.
Truly. I'm looking at this list of different topics we might talk about, and I'm a little overwhelmed, which I think potentially those that listen to this will be as well. But however, we've got your back. We're going to give you some solutions to some of these things that we talk about around administration. These are topics that leaders, pastors do need to get their arms around, or at least bring others along with them who can help them think really, really well. So, Dave, I feel like no matter what I ask you in life, you've got an answer that always, you know, contains like 3 points. It doesn't matter what.
It's annoying, isn't it?
Yeah. So I, you know, distill the first, you know, 5,000 years of history into 3 bullet points. I feel like you could do it. But I've heard you say a lot of times as you've visited other churches, because you've visited lots of churches, like common characteristics of churches that are just, they're growing. There's a vibrancy that God's using. So give us those three and we'll start there.
Well, just to caveat that, John, it doesn't always mean they're exploding in numerical growth. Mm-hmm. It means, I think the easiest way for me to frame it is the leaders are encouraged by what they're seeing, meaning that the things that they want to be about are happening.
Yeah.
So it's more of both a depth and breadth thing. But the churches that I see that are seeing that type of impact always have 3 big things in common. One is their Sundays are significant to the people that go there.
Yeah.
Everything from the sermon, the music, even what happens with kids, whatever that is, there's a lot of different options there. So Sundays are meaningful. 2, there's just a warmth to the church. You walk in the door as a guest and you feel welcomed. Hmm. You feel loved. You feel invited. And there's a sense of, hey, come be a part of what we're doing. But the third thing, and this is one of the things that I think often falls off the table for many churches, is they just do things well. Their ministries, whether that's the Sunday ministries or the Monday through Saturday ministries, are well administered.
Yes.
They're well led. They're easy to access. And when you go, you think this is worth my time. This is done in a way that is good and makes sense. So take any one of those 3 out of the equation. And oftentimes that's the pain point of the church. That's where they're hitting their heads and not being effective. And what's, I think most of us just naturally, those of us who are involved in pastoral ministry, we get those first 2. Yeah, because that's so theologically rich, right? We want people to know about God and encounter him in a meaningful way. We want them to feel love. So that knocks out 1 and 2. It's that 3rd component, I think, that often catches us off guard, and that is we can build trust by doing things well.
Yes.
And organizing them and administrating them in a way that people are well served.
That's exactly right. So it is a 3-legged stool. And oftentimes, you know, we've got an aptitude on 2, not 3 of them. And as an entrepreneur, it would be the same thing. You got a great eye for a new product, a new service, or something like that. Really good with people, and terrible, you know, in terms of bookkeeping and accounting and, you know, legal and things like that. So he's got to figure that out. And pastoral leaders have to as well. And then, Dave, you dropped that phrase in there, and that is actually where I wanted to start. I think so many of these things we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about, you know, legal and finances and facilities and all these kinds of things. At the end of the day, it is about making, you know, the trains run on time. It is about, you know, making sure that you run a tight ship. But at the end of the day, I really do think so much of this is about trust. And the way that you administer, and we'll talk about some of these different topics, you are always either making trust deposits or withdrawals.
That's right.
And, you know, different than maybe when you and I started a ministry a long time ago, there is an incredible skepticism for anything that's organized, anything that's big, any institution, any organization. There's an inherent skepticism where maybe, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, there was a trust. I mean, if there's an organization and it's got a building and a sign and some people in there, we should trust this. Now, there's a very, very inherent lack of trust. There's a skepticism. And if you don't handle these issues well, you continue to to erode trust, which will then erode your ability to care for, to shepherd, to teach, to train, to help people meet God. And so much of that is actually what's in play here, not just the X's and O's of some of this administration. So any other thoughts on
that? No, that's right, John. That you know, like it or not, and we probably don't like this, we live in a consumeristic culture.
Yes.
And people make value assessments based on the way you do things. In some senses, they make moral judgments. And so you may have an issue in the church that really isn't a moral issue. It's just a competence issue. Hey, we don't do this well, but I do think people will walk through the doors. They'll see that, and it will cause them to lean into that organizational skepticism that's already there.
Yeah,
there must be. This isn't poorly done. They must be covering something up that's really dark and sinister by doing it this way. And so it's just the way, it's just the water we swim in right now. And so my way of thinking is why would you want that to be the stumbling block that people don't let them stumble over the message,
right?
Let them stumble over something of substance and not over the fact that maybe you could do things better, that you're just not doing well.
Yeah, that's right. So there is I think we've used this analogy before on the podcast about it. You know, you walk into a restaurant and the way you're greeted, the way you're sat, the cleanliness of the menu and all kinds of things, you got a pretty good idea about what's going on in the back of house, what's coming out of that kitchen
before you've
even tasted the meal.
That's right.
And you just intuitively know. And people do the same thing with churches. They walk in, and oftentimes in 5 minutes or just multiple interactions, they've got a pretty good idea what's going on, you know, quote unquote, in the kitchen and what's being offered up to, you know, to the congregation. So, okay, really good. So I think we're going to raise all kinds of issues, I assume, here that are going to be a bit daunting to, you know, to others. I think the way this might be really helpful, Dave, for you and I interact is, and I think I can speak to some of the things that we do around here at Watermark, some transferable principles that will be helpful. I think if you kind of have an eye for the guy that's starting out or a little bit smaller and kind of speak into there, I bet you we could surface, you know, a dozen things that might be really helpful for people to understand, think about, take next steps, go learn, go have conversations, pick up the phone and say, hey, can you help me with this? That would be, I think, the win here, so that you don't end up being like undone with a laundry list of things that you just can't possibly get to. I'd love to talk about how we handle this, or one of the ways we handle a lot of these different issues at Watermark. And so we have what's called our business advisory team. We call it the BAT team for short. And so on that team are bankers, there are lawyers, there are people who do kind of real estate development. So all those kind of core functions, you know, some different HR folks as well. And they have they're not elected. They don't have any power per se. They are, as the middle word would suggest, an advisory team. And they meet at least once a month. And the way it works is there's generally one topic that they're going to talk about. This is a great best practice. 1 month, they're going to talk about our budget, you know, the budgeting process. One of them, they're going to go through all of our insurances and things like that. Then they're going to go facilities. They're going to talk about hiring, you know, our hiring plan, all those kinds of things. So all of those people know when they come, you know, here's the agenda. You can be thinking about this 1, 2, 3, 4 months ahead of time. And you get people with incredible competency here at the table to talk about some of these issues. And they make recommendations. They don't force anyone's hand. They don't force the elder's hand, staff hand. They just make recommendations and problem solve. And honestly, not just problem solve. They see around corners. They identify problems that we wouldn't have known otherwise. And people love to use their competencies to help in the church.
So, you know, helpful.
And if you can just
so helpful.
If you can just give them an opportunity. So they love it. That's how that works. And that's where we run a lot of these big decisions by. But again, the elders decide what it is that we do, the staff, these guys make, you know, they make recommendations. One of my favorite ones that we didn't action was one time they got together and they said, hey, one of the risks you have here is that so much of the church is always tied to the senior leader, whoever that is, the point person. And so it's our recommendation, or we think that it would be prudent and sound to get key man insurance. So, which is very common practice. You've got a Fortune 500 company and your CEO goes down immediately, stock prices goes down. You got to find a way to kind of mitigate that, right? It's just standard practice. And so they said, we recommend, you know, to get a policy, if we had to guess, giving would go down by, you know, this much, those kinds of things. And so I love it. Our elders, they took that and they probably actioned many of the things that they say. And they said, you know what, this one, we're not going to do that.
Sure.
Because it sends a wrong message. It sends that the church is about a person, not a people. And so we thank you. That was actually really, really good, sound advice, but we're not going to do that. And they came back and said, well, we didn't think you would, and we kind of thought you shouldn't, but that was our job. It's just to kind of
inform you. Awesome.
So most
you
of the
make the decision.
Most we'll of the time, it's let's look at our let's do another pass on the finances. That's generally how that goes. But that's a fun story. I love. So okay, let's tee up a few of these issues. Okay. And I don't. Again, we don't need to have the end all be all conversation on each one of these, but just a few things to think about, you know, again, kind of things that we were probably really ill prepared for, coming out of seminary and just this category of administration. So we can start anywhere. How about facilities? Give me your take on that. What do we need to know?
Well, and, you know, I know that facilities can run the gamut, John, as far as types, formats. Some people will have buildings that have belonged to the church for 100 years, depending on where you are.
Yeah.
You know, so you may have this older, even maybe a historical monument type building. A lot of the work I've done with church planting, I mean, you are renting out public spaces. You're in the public school. You might be meeting in a library. You might be in a strip center renting out and having to convert a retail space. So they run the gamut. But facilities are so important because, again, people walk through the door and immediately they begin to make value judgments. So think about this. You've got first Sunday, a family is coming to church. Maybe it's a family that's been unchurched. Maybe they're coming back with an interest in church and there's already a lot of concern. Maybe because they've seen so many horrible headlines about children being abused and neglected, they walk in the door and they walk into a space that's not clean, that's not well organized, that doesn't look good, and they immediately begin to make a value assessment about your ability to care well for their children. That's just the way people think, and that's the way perceptions are become reality for some folks. So I think having a space that's functional, a space that's clean, a space where there is consistent in messaging or branding, as we would say, is so important. And that's the hard thing about, and these are the pastors that are my heroes. It's the church planter. It's the solo church pastor who is, he's got so many things on his shoulders. He's the janitor. He's the counselor. You know, he's the social worker. He's this. I saw this really interesting study. It's been a long time, but most jobs in our culture have 6 to 7 core competencies. Someone did a study on pastors and realized they have 63 competencies that they're responsible for. It's just outrageous.
That seems doable.
Yeah. There you go. That's even more reason that we need Jesus. But facilities are really important. And there's safety issues in facilities. You want to be hospitable.
Yeah.
Right. You really want the physical expression that you're meeting in to sync up with the message. Yeah. Hey, we have a God who loves us. We have a God who welcomes us. We have a God who cares about the details of our lives. And you want your facility as best as within your power to reflect
that. That's right.
And sometimes we neglect that. We've all been a part of churches, and I know you're part of a church start years ago that transitioned over the years.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what your experiences are, but it's hard.
Well, it is, and I think about the same guy that you do, David. I was walking through a church, one of these historic churches, small church, and the pastor was walking me around, and he goes, "We just painted this," and I said, "When you say we, who do you mean?" He goes, "Oh, me and my wife. We were up here on a Friday night painting." So, and you know, and it's kind of all you can do is all you can do. But they had the ability to make it a little bit better, and they chose. You know, that was like one of their date nights, which I just loved. It was like what a care and concern for the congregation. So I think you hit on a lot of it. It does matter. You know, sometimes people would have, back to your three-legged stool analogy, Dave, someone would have a real aptitude for teaching and things like that and not an eye for aesthetics, for, you know, ease of access, those kinds of things. Well, someone does. And so if you'll empower them and things like that, one of the guys on our staff, David Pinuel, he's our director of kind of all the arts and communications teams. He has an eye and he walks around this campus and just makes note of everything. He's always got everything that needs to be improved, better said. And so he's got this running list every week of things like, guys, how did this happen? You know, we're going to fix this. And it makes us better, you know? And so I would just say to make sure someone really is tasked and people feel, and even better than that, like make the whole staff, make all the members feel like it's their campus, because it is. It's the first impression, you know, that physically people, the website will be the first impression a lot of people get, but physically when they walk on, they're starting to decide, do they trust you? Do you have something to say? Should they come back? Building campaigns, just a couple thoughts there. One, I will say it is really interesting to me how so many churches have kind of a God story about how they got their building.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not so much how they got their youth pastor, but how they got their, you know, there's a lot of things they're like, well, this is what we decided. But when it comes to buildings and location and things like that, I think sometimes we try to, you know, because those are tangible things, they're not spiritual, we downplay them. But it's really amazing to me how many churches just out of the blue felt like they were led to this property or the money came in or, you know, the city worked out something. And so I would just like look for that. I would expect that. If you don't have a building, pray for that.
Yeah.
And then if you don't have a building, I would begin to seed that idea with, you know, with the congregation. So if you're a young church planter, say, hey, someday we're going to build a building, you know, you know, don't give us the money just yet. We can. You could start a building fund if you wanted to. But some of you could just start setting some money aside, and we'll let you know when we have a you know, some opportunity that makes sense. That's a story here at Watermark. People knew that we were going to have a building. You know, it wasn't even a campaign. It was we're going to give you an opportunity that we've been talking about for years. This is now it. And it was just such a high watermark for our church. I'd want to tell the story in 20 minutes, if I can tell it in 30 seconds. We came across this property that we're in now. You know, it had a price tag to it. We told the congregation they had about 2 weeks. So what we asked them to do was to put on an envelope, write how much they were giving, basically. Then also was a self-addressed envelope back to them. So we took all those envelopes in, and we tallied up all the numbers that were on the outside of that envelope. And we told them if we didn't get enough money, we weren't going to move forward on the property. We were going to buy it in cash. And we'd open up those envelopes and we'd give it all the money back. Like we were, yeah. You can trust us. We're not going to sit on, you know, 80% of the money. Sorry, we're not going to go through with the building, but we now have all this money. We're going to give it back. That in of itself really gave us a lot of trust. And then we got together one night, counted the money, and it was just such a win. You know, it was such a big win. And then when it came to building this facility, we've got a incredible facility. I love the process we went through. This might be helpful to somebody. When we interviewed kind of architects and people that were going to help us, rather than telling them we want this many square feet, we want, you know, this many stories, or, you know, the tactical things that you normally would, we gave them 10 adjectives, 10 nouns, and 10 verbs. And we said, we're not telling you these granular tactical details. We want to tell you the vision of how this property, we hope, will be used of God in this community. And so we gave them these things. And then it was really interesting to sit in some of those meetings and see some of the pitches that we got back from architects. And you could tell the one we picked, his pitch was amazing. He came in and he showed at the time what would have been one of the most prominent churches in America, and just made it kind of a joke. He said, clicking through, and he said, this is, you know, this is what's hot right now. And, you know, we've been thinking a lot about you. And I just thought, oh gosh, this guy didn't get it. And he goes, but that's not what you want. And he goes, I think these are the kind of things that you're thinking about. And so whether we used all of his ideas or not, he understood who we were, and we built a building based on these values and how we wanted this property to be used. And it was a beautiful story. So that whole thing it's a really high water mark. We didn't have to manipulate people. We casted a vision for what could be, and it was really fun. So there was a real skillfulness that our elders showed during that time. It just brought up a lot of trust, a lot of momentum, and it was fun. So look for God to show up, have a plan, talk about it early and often, and make an ask, but don't beat your people, you know, and manipulate them and things like that. And then take care of whatever it is that God gives you.
It's good,
you know,
John.
Just be a really, really good steward. Let everyone have kind of this ownership mentality. So that's probably enough. Anything else would be outside of our ability to speak intelligently on it. So we probably should keep moving on.
Maybe overextending a bit further. Yeah.
How about this is just one, it's not fun, but I want to make sure we talk about legal issues. You have any thoughts there?
Oh man, yeah. Legal issues, compliance. Again, we want to do things the right way. Mm-hmm. We have so much instruction from the Word of God. not only what it means to be the people of God and all the direction he gives us in as much as that relationship, but we also have this idea that we see in the New Testament of compliance with the government. And so there are so many legal issues, whether those are organizational issues. What does it mean to have a 501c3? What does it mean to be able to receive tax-exempt gifts?
Yes.
What does it look like to be legally in compliance with your state's requirements regarding articles of incorporation and board of directors and things like that? And so there's this whole realm that probably falls within the category of legal government compliance that's really significant, that's really important. It's important because I think it's important to God. So first and foremost, and that would be enough if we stop there, but it's important to people too.
Yeah.
It's critically important to people are entrusting you with their spiritual lives, which nothing is more valuable than that. And if you think about even the family concept, they're entrusting you in some ways with their children. It helps you build trust when you say, hey, everything we do here is compliant. Like we go out of our way to pay attention to details and to make sure we're aligned with what the government says we have to be.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And even, you know, beyond that, when appropriate, so I was thinking about, I'm sure this would come up later, but I just want to make sure I say it now. All things, you know, kids, care, sexual abuse,
yes,
training and things like that. So Ministry Safe is probably the one that's that most
great,
people use.
Great
and
ministry.
So,
yep.
I would make sure anybody that is, you know, interacting with kids goes through that and every year and you just re-up and you can, so you can't make the chances zero, but you can really make them a lot lower by having training and making sure everyone's on the same playbook and you see something, say something. And there's just the culture of, no, this is not something to be trifled with, you know? So that would be
right.
Compliance, even when you're not even, you know, always required to, you want to go above and beyond, but there's just, you know, we probably should jump off this topic, but I'm just thinking about, you know, even like the church and a coffee shop is just such a thing right now. And you need to know, you should know in your own state, in your own city, there's a difference for most places. If you run the coffee shop yourself, so, if, you know, and here at Watermark, we have a coffee shop that we run, you know, and just kind of, we're just trying to break even. If we could, that would be amazing. But it's a gift to the community, a gift to our church. Lots of people from around the community come. But if we outsource that, if we said, hey, you can come a third party and rent our space. Now, suddenly we're taking kind of non-profit land, non-tax land, better said. We've got a non-profit status, so we don't pay, income tax. Well, they can come after you for that piece of whatever it is and start collecting, you know, taxes. So those are just the kinds of things you have to think through in regards of, you know, legally, all your HR compliances, all those kinds of things. You don't just get to play you know, we're doing God's business, so we don't have to play by those rules. You do. You can get shut down. You can get in a lot of trouble. And even I think worse than any of that, you really can tarnish the renown, the name of Christ.
That's
because
right,
you
John.
Just ran afoul of
that's right.
whatever. So it just, I don't know if we tick off all of these, but I just want to make sure that you like, that's a category you're thinking about. Go ahead.
Well, and I think that last category you brought up as far as why we do what we do is precisely right. There's this perspective that outsiders are going to have of us.
Yes.
That are never going to come through our doors. Maybe other business, maybe other coffee shops in the community, like, wait, what is Watermark doing? Or what's this church doing? Because, you know, we're competitors in some ways, or you just want to do things well and you want to do things right in a way that honors God and respects people.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of the thing that people, the misconceptions about church, what they think is going to happen as soon as they walk in, let's talk about finances, let's talk
all
about
right.
giving,
yeah.
You know, all of those kinds of things. So you have the mic.
Yeah. Again, it's a huge area in which we want to have integrity. And that's the whole process surrounding giving, John. That's everything from safekeeping of the money, right? How many times have we been in maybe a smaller church that maybe still passes the plate and you're like, did somebody just make change in the offering? Like, what happened there? You know? And so there's that part of it, you know, just who's counting it, who's taking it in. What does the pastor know? What does he not know? I do think most people have a high degree of expectancy of when you take the money and there's an opportunity for there to be a tax exempt gift that you handle that well. That at the end of the year, those records are correct and accurate and you've been a good steward of it. So there's everything that has to do, I think, physically and the internal controls around money.
Yep.
But then there's a whole other aspect of how do you spend it? And so I think that whole realm of finance is really, really important. And I've seen a lot of churches get into trouble for things that weren't malicious. They just were careless. And there's a difference.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, the trouble's still the trouble. And so, you know, whether you meant to or you made a mistake and it was an accident, there's a trust that you're building. There's a sacred trust you're building with the people that give money, that I'm going to safeguard this money that God has given you and you're giving it to us. And we want to do everything we can to be good stewards of that, not solely in the way that we spend it. We want to be that too, but we want to safeguard it. We want to keep it. We want to honor. We want to honor the Lord in this, and we want to honor you as a giver.
Yeah.
And we want to treat you well. Churches get in trouble all the time for commingling of funds. And
good.
So the
talk
whole
about that. Talk about
yeah.
That.
So somebody designates a gift, donor intent means something,
yeah.
Which means if you take that money, someone has, you know, you're a new church plant. So you really love contemporary music, and somebody dies, and somebody has a $10,000 gift that they give to you, and they say, hey, what we really want here is a pipe organ, because, you know, Aunt Mildred, who passed away, loved the pipe organ. And so we want to give this the name of Aunt Mildred. Well, if you take those funds and you don't designate them in a separate account, or you don't designate them in an accounting way, and you commingle those funds, the next thing you know, that money goes to that fund is dwindled, and you're using it to pay your youth pastor. You're buying, you know, a new drum kit. You're in violation of federal law. Pass-through gifts. Somebody comes to you and says, hey, I want to give money so that this person that's a member of our congregation go buy a car. So I'm just going to give it to the church. I'll take the tax exempt gift. You can take that money, forward it to that person, then go buy a car. You can't do that.
Yes.
That's in violation of federal tax law. And so there's a lot of things like that, that if you don't know what you're doing and you don't understand what the law requires of you, you will jeopardize far more than just the trouble, again, that you'll get in for violating tax law. You begin to just erode the trust. I love the way you say it. You're taking out huge withdrawals of trust, and it not only begins to compromise your own personal integrity in the way that people see you. Wouldn't it be a tragedy if the integrity of the message that God loves us through Jesus was somehow diminished the mind of someone because you didn't handle money well?
Yeah.
But that's what happens. We see it all the time. Go pay attention on the internet. And here's the other thing that you need to know in all these areas, both the legal and the financial things. We live in an information age. People can find things out. People can go online and get public documents, whether that's the way that you run your kids' ministry, whether that's there's a registered sex offender attending your church, you know. So your policies will ultimately become exposed. Used to be when you and I started out, the idea was always, let's do things the right way and assume that someday everybody may find everything out. The reality of it is today, in information age, people can from their keyboard, find everything out. Yeah. So you better do things with intent.
While they're in the church.
While they're in the church, in the middle of a worship service, right? There it is. It's just right there for you.
Who is this guy?
So there's a higher scrutiny, which means there should be a higher degree of attention.
That's right.
To these things, because they're important.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think you mentioned the word controls just around here at Watermark. We will, you know, get an outside firm to do an audit every year. Just want to make sure that, you know, we've got good processes and controls in place, but boy, you know, just because someone says they're a Christian and they're on church staff, they can, you know, misappropriate funds, or you could make mistakes. There's 100 things that could go wrong. And so we just want someone from the outside who's paid basically to spot problems to come in. You know, and we can look everybody in the eye and say, now everything's accounted for. You know, if you, I guess technically, if you wanted to see that report, you could. Some churches will publish kind of their annual report, you know, and budget and things like that. Most people want to know just at a high level. Some people want to know at a high level what's going on. But I think just as many controls as you can have. Again, how can we build trust would be a really good category to continually think through. Okay, raising money. We didn't talk about that one.
Yeah.
You know, George Mueller. I was reading his, you know, some of his biography. You know, the famous Brit who ran an orphanage and you know, thousands of kids and never once asked for money. Okay. Well, here's and that story is always trotted out. Here's the thing, George spoke all over the world and told the story of what was going on in the orphanage. And I do believe, I bet you he didn't go, and now I need money to feed these kids, those kinds of things.
Sure.
He did not. However, as he was telling that story, he knew what was coming in. Okay. And so you've got to figure out a way to keep the lights on, you know, to maximize the opportunities that God's given you. And you're going to have to figure out a way to give your people an understanding of a theology of stewardship. This is all God's money.
Right.
We're just kind of temporary holders of it, and we're accountable. It's His, and that the question is how much we, do we give? It's how much of His do we keep for ourselves not release? So you have to teach that, and then you have to make an ask. And so Watermark, we have a lot of new people since COVID, and we've never really taught them. And I guarantee you, if you go pull the numbers, everybody that's new has, I will make this an overstatement, they have no idea how the lights stay on here. There's like, it's amazing. You walk in, cup of coffee, this is an incredible experience. Well, they don't know that a lot of people are giving, and we are going to have to go back and both kind of teach these people, and we're going to have to start making asks as well. So you're gonna have to do that, Pastor. Don't make it weird. Don't manipulate people. Sometimes not having those funds to deploy will give you your answer. Should we do this or not? That's okay. But be bold. Don't be afraid to ask, but also don't make it weird. And also know that, some people, that's their number one fear about coming to church is getting shaken down somehow. But you're going to have to figure that out, and don't ignore it. You have to know your numbers. You've got to know where you're tracking. And so, on the whole budget thing too, just one other thing, and I think most churches do this now, we run our fiscal year, end of June, beginning of July. And so that we don't get in a bind if we were to have giving kind of lag. We would know that really in December, end of December, beginning of January, when most of the gifts come in. So we don't close our books then, find out, oh my goodness, we were short, or oh my goodness, we have this incredible surplus. What should we do with it? We know that before the books are closed. So we could either tighten down or we could dream a little bit. And I think that's a really, really good best practice for churches or any kind of nonprofits that rely on any type of giving or donations to make it run, to make sure your fiscal year runs somewhere, not December 31st, January 1. And I would make sure that there's a buffer to make adjustments and you leave yourself enough runway to do so, kind of as a best practice. So let's hop off of this one, unless you have anything else on finances.
No, I think
finances.
Just a point of emphasis that you made. I think that regularly talking about stewardship and finances is so important, John. Having a proactive, here's what this means, right? Here's what the Bible teaches us about this subject. And if that will be a regular part of your rhythm, because it's really everywhere in the Bible. So
yep.
It's not like you're having to find an obscure passage to talk about. Jesus talks so much about money.
In the
There's
mind
an opportunity.
Of prophets, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then I think what that does is it creates a discipleship opportunity for the people. Because the weird conversations are always when you stand up and say, hey, guess what? We're 2 months behind on budget. And if you don't put money in the plate, my family won't have any gifts for Christmas. And
yeah.
I just feel so self-serving when you're the guy. So one of the ways to avoid that is just creating the expectancy and a culture of generosity throughout the year. And so I would say be far more proactive than you are reactive to finances is critically important.
I love it. Let me take off a couple of these, and then I'm going to talk about how to make some of this all happen, Dave, and get your thoughts on that. So another category is insurance. So boy, you need to go back over your insurances and understand what it is that you have, what's covered, what's not. I heard a church recently tell a story that they thought basically their insurance would cover every individual. Like they would, their maximums would cover every individual involved with, God forbid, anything that was not as it should be, and they needed to kind of settle. Well, it turns out there was an umbrella. What didn't cover per person, it covered the whole instance. So anything
wow.
that happened at the church,
yeah.
Which is probably how most insurances are written. And so they didn't know that, and they got really, really close to kind of maxing that out and getting in trouble. And they talked about just how close they were to shutting down. So there's just things like that you need to understand.
Yep.
And so, if you went to seminary, like leverage your gifts, find someone else who can go over all of those things. Because again, some mistake, something that wasn't written correctly, something you assumed was the case wasn't. And next thing you know, something that God's doing that's beautiful gets shut down. And so
yeah,
make sure
it's
that,
tragic.
Yeah, make sure that you really do understand that. All things HR, there's a ton of compliance there. It is a function of a church. You need someone, who can help you with that. Sometimes you can have a fractional role, someone offsite who can do all your payroll and those kinds of things, and that could make sense if you're small, save you a lot of money from having to hire one person. But you just want to make sure that you've got systems to onboard people. I think we talked about, we now have a culture camp now where
we
have all these
yeah.
Here's who we are, and you could to be here, this is what that means. And when people leave, make sure you do a really good exit interview, so if any you understand why it is that people might leave your staff. Good performance review process.
Mm-hmm.
People, especially younger people today, they want to be developed. They want to know where they stand, and they want to know what the gap is between where they are and where they could be and what to do to fill that gap. And you do them a real favor by having those candid conversations all throughout the year. But just make sure all of that, again, is covered, and not just making sure the funds are just wired to accounts. You need to make sure that you have a tight ship there. Websites, we didn't talk about that, but you know, we talk about things that we are not, you know, really competent in, or we have no business talking about. Just make sure. A couple things I asked. I was talking with David Petty, who on my team runs all of our communications, and it just, hey, what are your pet peeves? And you know, one of them was, pastors sometimes will design websites for themselves, and so they're trying to impress their seminary friends and people in the, they're answering questions that people in the community don't They're using language that people don't understand. So just think about your community, and you are, if I could give you one piece of advice, you are not the target audience when you go to, to build that website. And it is now the front door. So I will bet you, if your grandfather was a pastor, he and the team were out there on a Saturday mowing the lawns and trimming, you know, and planting and making everything beautiful, because that was how people, you know, experienced the church. Well, that now they the drive, quote unquote, drive by is your website.
And your website.
And it matters. And so you're building trust or eroding it right away. And so make sure that, you know, the late 90s isn't calling and asking for your website back. And there's really simple solutions. You don't need, you know, pages and pages and pages and pages on your website. You probably just need a few to start with. Make sure, another one, we just see this all the time with churches, not putting your address on the website. Mm-hmm. So that Google can't really tell who you are, where you are. Or, this is really big, make sure you claim your address on Google, on Bing, which is what ChatGPT now is running. They're most of those kind of services are running off of, or some of them are, better said, on Bing. And so they're using that data. And if your church isn't in there with the address, it doesn't know really who you are, or Apple Maps. And so when people are doing searches and they're looking for you in the map, you need to show, make sure you show up. Very, very simple. This is one, most churches don't do any type of email opportunity capture. They've got a lot of social, which is great. But most everybody will see the headline of an email as it comes in your inbox. And if you're a genius on social media, a lot of people will never see that. So just don't underestimate the value of email. And again, it depends on who you're, you know, who you're targeting, a lot of things. But I'm always amazed at how people just blow by that. Like, that's old school. Well, it still lands in their inbox, it and does. They still will see the headline. Don't give up on that. And then, you know, just find people that understand H1 tags, you know, and title tags, you know, all these kinds of things. You don't have to know all that, but just make sure someone is paying attention to it. And you didn't just, you know, go to Squarespace and start dropping in some really dense theological, you know, statements because it would impress you. Just make sure that you're thinking about who it is that is on the other side of that. And make another one David said is, you know, make sure you realize people skim websites now. They don't go line, but it's not a book that they're reading. And so you, whatever it is, the content that you have needs to be very skimmable so they can double click on what they want to with their eyes and just keep scrolling. That's just how people consume content now. So, okay, there you go. Things, again, if we're playing a game show, would be things we're not qualified to talk about for 500. Let's move off of websites and things like
good call.
So Dave, in all of this, you know, I don't know where this goes, but there's a lot of meetings to all of these things, to all of these functions.
Yep.
There is meetings. I did not have a class on how to conduct meetings in seminary, and yet I conduct so many of them. And so we did an episode a long time ago on meetings, but I'd love your thoughts just as we think about all of this, and specifically how to run and think about meetings.
Two reasons that people hate meetings. And this has been,
I thought you don't have three, you just have two?
No, just two this time.
Okay,
there's
right.
probably 10.
I feel like I'm not getting my money's
worth. Let me give you the top two. Sorry. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. It's going to be a compressed segment. Number one is they're irrelevant, meaning whatever we talked about, it really doesn't matter.
Yep.
Number two is I go to a meeting where I'm invisible. So I think we need to keep that in the forefront of our minds as we strategize meetings and plan meetings and prepare meetings. As that is, I want the things we talk about at the meeting to be incredibly important to the people that are gathered in those meetings. And I don't want anybody to be invisible, even if it means at times those awkward, I'm going to call on you and just say, hey, John, you've been quiet today. What do you think?
Yeah.
You know, what are your thoughts? You have any thoughts? If you will just spend a little bit of time strategizing, pastors by and large are such good communicators. If you'll look at the meeting and the intentionality of a meeting the way you look at a sermon or even an announcement, you'll do so much better.
Yeah.
But just make sure the people that are there need to be there, and the meeting is one that needs to happen because it's significant. So do away with irrelevance. No one can be invisible, and you'll gain so much ground that way.
That's right. Ask the people in the meeting, hey, what could make this more effective? What could, you know, you see this on your calendar. What would make you want to come to this? And what would make it feel like, you know, A, this is not irrelevant, you know? Do you feel like you should be in this meeting, have something to say to that? And then again, like, a meeting is not, it's not a place for you to hold court and just start talking, right? So you have meetings because you need to do something. There needs to be a purpose for a meeting. And if you don't know the purpose, just kill it, kill the meeting.
Yeah.
And you could play the game, what happens if I kill the half the meetings that I'm involved with? And you know, if the church is still standing and people are doing great, then don't put it back on your calendar, you know? Or legacy meetings, we've always had this meeting, just put a bullet in those. Do not show up at those. Don't call other people to those. And then, you know, again, have something that you decide that you stack hands on, and then make sure you go back and make sure that those things are actually, in fact, being done. And so if
that's
not you, it's someone else. We decided we're going to do this. Do not rehash that 3 months from now. You know, guys, I was wondering, no, if you decided something, someone needs to be accountable for it. You know,
absolutely.
So who's going to do it? Who's accountable? When? You know, who and when are the big two. You should always walk away with the meeting knowing those kinds of things, you know, and then come back and really make sure that you're revisiting those and not just putting those, you know, out into the ether. We decided these, but we never really come back to them. And then just know that, you know, maybe you want to have some fun, you want to have some personal connection on those. And then people, if you know information about the church or the organization that your team doesn't, they probably would want to know. And so it's a really good chance just to catch everybody up. But make sure that you're just not asking people to show up to meetings you wouldn't want to come to if you were them. And that, oh, it's a great sin of pastors.
It is a great
sin. Brother, we could keep talking. One of the ones we just didn't get to, I don't think anywhere else in here that we didn't talk about in seminary, was just personal finances. We talk about, you know, the church's finances, but any thoughts? We're just going to wedge this one in here about a personal leader's finances, especially if they're in ministry at a church.
Yeah, I think the way that you steward your own resources, and when I'm thinking of that, I'm thinking of the three T's we always talk about, John: time, treasure, talent.
See, at all threes.
Well, that's not original to me. That's someone else came up with it, that alliteration. Part of it is the way in which you organize your life financially matters. People, particularly in smaller churches, they see the way you live. They see stress that maybe you unintentionally are bringing upon your family. By that, they watch that, and they care. They care deeply for you. The time piece is really big. I would say the number one critique that I hear from church members about their pastor that erodes that trust is he's either inaccessible or unresponsive.
Huh.
I send him an email.
Yep.
It's been
yep.
months.
Yep.
I text him. He doesn't respond. And so you can undo so much good by just so organize your life in a way that you have a rule of life and how you respond to people.
Yeah.
You know, you and I both know here we have 24 hours or a business day to respond to something.
Yeah.
That's just the way we do it. And sometimes those are people that are very close to us and are key volunteers in our ministry. Sometimes they're people that just come from the outside that don't know us and they find, hey, John McGee looks like someone who can answer my question. Yeah. I'm going to ask him. But that is a way that we really undermine our credibility.
Yeah.
What does it communicate to somebody? I don't care.
Yep.
You're not significant enough to me for me to respond to what you've asked me. And it's a really bad thing to do. But pastors are just notoriously bad at it. And I get it. I get you're busy. You know, I get you've got a sermon to prepare. I know there's hundreds of people that need your time and attention. So either create systems where you're not the bottleneck to it, but please just be responsive.
Yeah, that's good. So it's not what I thought you would say, but I think it's really good to say. You know, a best practice, 24 hours, just respond. Just tell you and your staff, hey, let's just stack hands that, you know, unless something comes up, we're just going to respond in 24 hours. And it could just be, I got your email. That person you talked about didn't hear back from the pastor. Just to say, hey, it's going to take me some time to get back with you, but I got that. Thanks so much for responding. That's helpful. Two, you can, if you've got let's say you're a senior pastor, you don't have to have an inbox that only you get to peer into or respond to. You can set up something as pastoral office at your church or student ministry at. And then you can kind of farm those. Someone can just kind of say, hey, will you take this one? You take this one. Doesn't necessarily mean you've got to return every email that somehow is germane to what you do. There might be some really efficient ways to do that. But so personal finances, as you and I are getting old, there is compound interest. It is an amazing thing. And I know young pastor, you're trying to make sure your kids have, shoes and something to eat. But if you can just start putting money away in your 401k or 403b, then even though you don't, on this side of eternity, you don't make tons of money, you'll be fine on the other, the back end of your life, whenever you want to start slowing down. You won't have to be, I just see pastors all the time. They're probably past their prime and they could work less, but they haven't saved for their retirement and they can't retire, and the church doesn't want to turn them out on the street. And so they're kind of stuck and they're stewarding money, or they're not stewarding money well. They're kind of keeping, this guy on the payroll, and all that would have been avoidable had it just started putting money away early and often. So
a lot of guys along those lines, when I talk to financial advisors, wealth managers that serve the church, the thing they always say, particularly about young ministers, is that they opt out of Social Security, mm-hmm. but then they don't provide for themselves. Right. And then you're down the road and now you're without a safety net and you got nothing and you're coming up against the end. And I think that's probably maybe some of the people you're alluding to fall into that category. Like if you're going to opt out, you better do something.
Yes. And that did, another topic for another time, but yes, especially if you have, some people feel they have the freedom to opt out of Social Security as a minister. I would read the statements, I would pray, I would think, I would talk to someone who can advise you on that. But if you are, if that is you, if you've opted out, you literally have no safety net and you need to make sure that, you're planning accordingly. And then also I think just understand that if you're a pastor, you are not going to be the richest person in the congregation. And so you should not take your cues from whoever in fact is. And so they may fly first class to Disney and they may take their kids and they might not just go to Disney. They might buy all the upgrade passes and stay on site and get, I remember that was like a thing. It was like, have breakfast with Cinderella, and so we didn't do that, because guys will watch the movie or we'll try to shake her hand as we see her out on the property, but that's outside of our budget. We didn't go to Disney every year, but if you if the average cup of coffee at Starbucks, I googled it today, was $3.15.
wow.
So if you and your spouse drink a cup of coffee every day, if you just didn't and drink water or brought your own Folgers, put that in a in some kind of fund, well, in a couple of years you could do a lot of damage. You could go to Disney and you probably
could even go to the character breakfast,
I don't know, depending on how many kids you have and things like that, but you can get them there and you're not flying first class, you're driving the minivan. But I just think if we think we're supposed to live like everyone else, or especially we don't compare ourselves to those below us, we never do. It's always those who have much, much more, then you're going to be frustrated. Mm-hmm. And if you can just drive your lifestyle stake early and often, this is what we make. We live within our means. We save for the future. And we are just prudent. Then you're not stressed out. But it won't accidentally happen. Someone who makes a ton of money can accidentally have all of their bills covered and their future covered. But if you're listening to this podcast and you're a pastor, that won't accidentally happen. Just like, churches don't accidentally get organized. Like you said, you're going to have a rule of life. You're going to have to think well about that. And so just as there's someone out there, I just want to say, hey, start putting money away right now. And you'll be glad. I know it hurts. Find it somewhere. And just don't get caught trying to keep up with some people in your congregation who just have so much more. So that's all. There's a lot of freedom in driving a lifestyle stake and living within your means that you'll be a better leader, candidly, because you won't go to bed at night completely stressed. Everyone's going to be a little bit stressed out about money, but you won't be consumed with that if you have a lifestyle that is, and you're just living within your means. So interesting way to end. Dave, do you have any other thoughts? And then we're going to shut this one down here.
Man, I don't. That's really helpful. I was even thinking as you were saying that, John, probably what we don't do when we're younger is we don't think about the last day. We're not thinking about the last day on our first day. And so I think that idea beyond money is really important. How do I want to finish? Yeah. Right? Who do I want to be to my wife, to my kids? What legacy do I want to live? How about leave? How about I start working towards that today and have a long view? Because it is overwhelming.
Yeah.
Sunday comes every week, right? And it's easy to get in that weekly Sunday rhythm, but think long term.
Yeah,
plan long term.
Okay, so here's where I am. This is the fourth one we've done. This is now my least favorite episode that we've done.
Great.
And I'm so tempted to say we're not publishing this because I'm not passionate about this topic and I don't like to talk about it. And I don't know, we've had truckloads of energy. However, we are absolutely publishing this because of that reason that I think a lot of people listening to this don't want to talk about this stuff, and they want to put their head in the sand. And this will be the least favorite of the six that we do here, but churches aren't going to shut down because you didn't get the graphic right. You could shut down the work of God because you missed some of the things that we just talked about here. And it does matter. I know that it's not fun. I know you don't have a whole lot of energy, but you're going to have to figure this out. So back at the top, that bat team that we talked about could be a way. If you got a better way, that's great. Just make sure that you're stewarding and you're on top of and you're organized on all these things that go into today to running a church. Apostle Paul, he didn't have any of this. He didn't have a sound system. He didn't have a legal team. But today, if Paul was going to have a church and a building, these are the kinds of things he would have to deal with, and you do too later. So, brother, anything else? And then we'll...
That's all good. I really appreciate it. Yeah, you're right. This is probably the most low interest for all of us that went into... we didn't go to ministry to do admin, but it's the highest risk. Yeah. So low interest, high risk. So hopefully it's helpful to someone.
Good. Pick a couple action items out. Make some phone calls. You don't have to do any of this. Just make sure you've got people that are on this that can help you. So friends, thanks so much for listening. If you have any questions or comments, if you need Dave to distill any of life's complexities down into 3 points, you can always reach us at clp@watermark.org. That's clp@watermark.org. We'll talk to you again next time.